Okay. Thank you, counsel. We appreciate your participation by conference call today. I suspect you heard the previous argument, so I'll try not to repeat anything. But for Mr. Rubin, I'll give you around 3 minutes to get rolling on the case, and then at that point, if the judges have questions, we'll jump in by seniority. There's just two of us on this argument. Judge Akarak will be vouching in later to be the third member of our panel. So with that, Mr. Rubin, if you are ready, you may proceed. If I didn't call the case, it's 19-2112, United States versus Shelton.
Thank you, Your Honor. Daniel Rubin, on behalf of Mr. Shelton, may it please the court, opposing counsel. The district court, in denying Mr. Shelton's motion to suppress, made multiple determinations, including, one, whether there was a sufficient basis for reasonable suspicion of a potential burglary, two, whether there was probable cause and exigent circumstances to enter the curtilage of someone's home without a warrant, three, whether to impound the vehicle in a private driveway under a community caretaker rationale, and four, whether the search warrant was supported by probable cause. And the court made each of these important and decisive determinations all under the wrong legal standard, which the court used viewing the weight of the evidence in the light most favorable to the government. This was legal error. It also was not fair, and it was not just. We ask this court to deny the district court's denial of Mr. Shelton's motion to suppress and remand proceedings consistent with this court's decision. I begin with the lack of reasonable suspicion by Officer Estrada. The district court determined that on the night of January 4th, 2018, because it was late at night in a high crime area, a vehicle had its doors open and there were three people who were standing by the car with flashlights, that this was enough for Officer Estrada to have reasonable suspicion that a vehicle burglary was occurring. Well, it wasn't enough. There was no vehicle burglary. Instead, it was Mr. Shelton and his friend standing by a car that they had permission from the owner to access that car. The district court seemed to disregard in making its reasonable suspicion determination that, one, the porch light of the home was on, two, the lights of the car were on, three, the car was running, and four, the car had not been reported stolen. The Supreme Court in U.S. versus Cortez in 1981 confirmed that an investigatory stop must be justified by some objective manifestation that the person stopped is or is about to be engaged in criminal activity. The fact that the officer here subjectively thought he might be observing a vehicle burglary is irrelevant to determining whether there was an objective basis to detain the participants of the vehicle. I next turn to Officer Estrada's entry into the curtilage of a private residence without a warrant. This was not justified because he had, one, no probable cause and to arrest Mr. Shelton, and two, there were no exigent circumstances, and the officer needed both. Because Officer Estrada had no reasonable suspicion to begin with, this did not then ripen into probable cause because the occupants of the car walked away and he did not heed, Mr. Shelton did not heed his unlawful instruction of come here. Mr. Shelton had the right to not talk to the officer, and he had the right to walk through his own backyard. The Tenth Circuit in U.S. versus Davis in 1996 held that walking away from officers does not furnish the basis of a valid Terry stop. Under Story versus Taylor, the Tenth Circuit under that reasoning, Officer Estrada's instruction of come here was not lawful, so therefore Mr. Shelton did not disobey it, because you cannot disobey an unlawful order. The lack of reasonable suspicion, to begin with, again, did not ripen into probable cause based on Mr. Shelton not wanting to talk to an officer and then, again, walking on his own property to his backyard. Now, the court found that this – yes.
This is Judge Temkevich. Did Mr. Shelton ever inform Officer Estrada that he lived at that residence – and that he was a permissive user of the vehicle?
My understanding from the record is that he did not.
When did the officer find that out?
Well, the officer, I don't think, did a great investigation the night of, and the record reflects that. I believe that The officer, the incident happened January 4th. The officer wrote up a search warrant on January 8th. He did not figure out the vehicle owner until the 14th. However, he should have figured it out, of course, on the night of, before he impounded the vehicle. In terms of when he figured
I would have expected Mr. Shelton to, you know, let the officer know that this was his home and his car.
Well, I think, Your Honor, given his Fifth Amendment rights and, one, to begin with, he was suspected of a vehicle burglary that, you know, he was allowed to use the car. So I think that put him in a pretty vulnerable position of, wanting to.
I would have thought the opposite. If he had the right to control the vehicle, I don't think he could show that. That would have dissipated any suspicion the officer might have had that there was a burglary.
Well, Your Honor, I think that a lot of folks, particularly maybe in high crime areas, are not trusting of law enforcement officers. So, if they're aware of their Miranda rights, they probably just think it's better at that point just to not say anything. But I can understand your reasoning as well, Your Honor. He did not disclose. To answer your question, I don't know when it came to Officer Estrada's attention that he was allowed to be in the home, but it wasn't that evening, is my understanding of the record. I was on probable cause and exigent circumstances, and the district court found that this was hot pursuit. The Tenth Circuit in U.S. versus Jackson in 2005 held that an officer needs both probable cause and exigent circumstances for hot pursuit. Hot pursuit occurs when an officer is in immediate or continuous pursuit of a suspect from the scene of a crime. In that case, U.S. versus Jackson, the underlying offense was an objectively confirmed armed bank robbery, not a subjectively incorrectly suspected vehicle burglary.
This is Jeff Simkiewicz again. Does your exigent circumstances argument turn on our conclusion that Officer Estrada lacked the reasonable suspicion at the time that Shelton took off?
It begins with that, and I think it's that much harder to ripen into probable cause. But I think as a standalone argument, it's fine as well, because, again, my exigent circumstances falls on he walked away from the vehicle, and the officer's testimony at the suppression hearing, he confirmed that Mr. Shelton walked away. Several times he confirmed that. He also was in his own yard at that point, and he was allowed to do that. It was a private residence. And then the other...
Nobody knew that at that point.
Mr. Shelton did. He understood that he was on his own property and that he was allowed to go to the backyard. I guess the officer did not. But the officer all this time could have also, had he suspected a burglary, he could have sat in his car in the front and just observed what was going on. So that could have been what a reasonable officer would have done. But he chose not to do that. But yes, I think the exigent circumstances, one, is much less likely to succeed based on a lack of reasonable suspicion. But two, even as a standalone, it doesn't ripen because, again, as I've mentioned, Mr. Shelton is allowed to walk to his own backyard. He's allowed to walk away from an officer, and he's allowed to disregard an instruction of come here when it's not a lawful order. The district court did, however, in incorrectly determining that this was hot pursuit, cite the very important case of U.S. versus Mongold, which held that an officer has a heavy burden of demonstrating exigent circumstances that required hot pursuit. Here, the fact that someone walks away and does not listen to an unlawful order does not meet that heavy burden. I next moved to...
Didn't all three of them kind of scatter, flee at about the same time?
Well, the video, yes, they all walked out of the car at the same time, but they were all walking, and the video shows that, the officer's testimony, and they're walking again on the property of Mr. Shelton. So, yes, they did at the same time. Did they then
start running at some point?
They did. The officer confirmed in the video as well that they then started running, but really only as a result of the officer escalating the incident and sort of yelling and running after him at that point. I next turn to the impoundment of the vehicle. Under United States versus Sanders, the 10th Circuit in 2015 determined that an impoundment of a vehicle located on private property that is neither obstructing traffic nor creating an imminent threat to public safety is constitutional only if justified by both a standardized policy and a reasonable, non-pretextual community caretaking rationale. Here, the stated purpose of the impoundment by the officer himself was for purposes of searching the car. It was in a private driveway. The car could have been turned off and locked. There was no reason for that car to be impounded but for the fact that the officer wanted to take it away and search it immediately. Officer Estrada did not even bother to contact the owner before impounding the car. As I mentioned earlier, and as confirmed by Officer Estrada, the first time that he got in touch with the actual owner of the car was 10 days later on January 14th. Now, finally, moving on to the search warrant was not supported by probable cause. The search warrant was for drug paraphernalia, illegal narcotics, proof of ownership, proof of occupancy, and burglary tools. Regarding the drugs and drug paraphernalia, one of the officers that evening found a syringe on one of the other car occupants, Mr. Delavecchio. There was no residue in that syringe, and as we pointed out in our opening brief, a syringe is legal. Mr. Delavecchio also did not make any statements about the car after the after that was found. So that itself, because there was no linkage between the syringe and the car, that was not enough for probable cause relating to the drugs or drug paraphernalia. Now, moving to the burglary tools as referenced in the search warrant, well, again, we know this wasn't a car burglary because Mr. Shelton had access to the car and he was legally allowed by the owner to access it. But there was no reference in the affidavit that the car was or was not stolen, which would have been helpful, although, of course, we know it was not. There was also in the affidavit no indication of whether the owner had or had not been contacted. And we know that the search warrant was written on January 8th, 4 days afterwards, and the owner of the car had not been, the officer had not been in touch with the owner at that point. So the arrest didn't happen.
The officer contacted the owner after the search warrant affidavit and the search occurred. Is that correct?
So the officer on the night of, before impounding the vehicle, did not even reach out to the owner, did not figure out who it was, I don't think. Definitely did not contact. Now, the officer said that between writing up the search warrant, he attempted to contact the owner of the car. But she was not contacted until January 14th. So he did not actually touch base with her until January 14th. I think the big elephant in the room here is again back to the wrong legal standard. I think we would still win this case even if the judge had used the correct legal standard. But again, he viewed the evidence in the light most favorable to the government, and the district court had it actually used the right legal standard would not have given so much deference to Officer Estrada's hunch that he might have observed a possible vehicle burglary, and concluded the district court would not have then concluded that Mr. Estrada had reasonable suspicion to seize the car in the driveway. Your Honor, if there's no other questions at this time, I'd like to reserve the remaining 2 minutes, please.
Judge Baldock, do you have any questions?
None at this time.
Okay. Thank you, counsel. Let's hear from the United States, Ms. Rizzoni.
Good morning, Your Honors. Counsel, may it please the court. Jennifer Rizzoni on behalf of the United States. Your Honors, this court has a number of grounds on which to affirm the district court's denial of the motion to suppress. I'll go through each of the issues briefly here, but if I may start with the standard that was addressed originally at the beginning of his defense counsel's argument. The government does admit the standard of review, the standard that was used by the district court was incorrect in this case. It did look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the government. But first of all, I will say that all of this was argued in footnotes in the briefing. It wasn't fully briefed by either party. But secondly, there are no contested facts in this case. The defense didn't contest it below and really doesn't contest them here in the Court of Appeals. Additionally, what this court has before it is what is a pertinent 2-minute time frame video that it can look at to determine the facts and how they comport with what the district court found. So the fact that that the facts were not contested really helps to not have that, or helps that the standard does not impact the court's decision here. And more importantly, the ultimate determination of reasonableness under the Fourth Amendment is going to be a question of law reviewed de novo. And so this court has the opportunity to look at those facts and review whether the district court's determination of reasonableness was appropriate in that case. That all being said, going back to the actual substance of the district court's opinion, the government first contends that Shelton wasn't seized in the driveway when Officer Estrada first pulled up. In order to have been seized, this court knows that under Hodari D, seizure only can occur if there is, one, a show of authority, which clearly there was here, but two, that there's submission to that authority. And it's the government's contention that neither Mr. Shelton nor any of his compatriots submitted to any authority that Officer Estrada showed on the evening of January 4th, 2018. That all being said, though, moving on, if in fact the court does find that somehow Mr. Shelton was seized, Officer Estrada had ample reasonable suspicion when he pulled up to the driveway that evening. As you know, under Terry v. Ohio, this court looks at the totality of the circumstances and really only needs a minimal level of objective justification to reach that reasonable suspicion standard. Here, what Officer Estrada observed as he drove by the home in question was a number of subjects surrounding a vehicle. The doors were open. They were looking in with a flashlight. The address in Roswell is a high crime area, as testified to by Officer Estrada, and it was nearly midnight. Having seen this factual circumstance, Officer Estrada immediately turned around his vehicle and he pulled up into the driveway of Shelton's home. And in doing so, he then observed that the doors were then closed, that the headlights and taillights were on, the vehicle was running. But interestingly, the individuals were not visible anymore, almost as if they were trying to conceal themselves in the vehicle. The individuals then, as Officer Estrada was...
does it matter that... that Mr. Shelton was on his own driveway during all this?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. Does it matter that he was in his driveway?
Yes, was it on his own property when all this happened?
Your Honor, in this particular case, the district court found that the driveway was not the curtilage of the house, that it was the fact that he was in the driveway was not a factor in this case in terms of... And that was in terms of the hot pursuit analysis that the district court did. But the fact that he was in his driveway at the time that Officer Estrada was, had pulled into the driveway or backed behind the car, Officer Estrada didn't know who these individuals were or whether it was Mr. Shelton's driveway or whether he was a stranger in what he suspected was obviously a vehicle burglary or a vehicle theft. So
wouldn't he have found out... At the time he arrested him, I presume, or what's the record show whether Mr. Shelton was asked for identification, and wouldn't that identification have shown his living address?
Yes, I don't know that at the time he was arrested, whether or not he answered that question. Going back to your question, I think it was about whether or not the vehicle was his. He actually, and you can find this at the Record on Appeal at page 104, he actually said he didn't know whose vehicle the car was. So I'm not entirely sure whether he was asked whether that home was his, although I do know that there was some question about that throughout the evening. He certainly told the officer directly that he didn't know whose car it was, and furthermore, he said that anything that was found in the vehicle was not his. Moving on from that, Your Honor, it's the government's contention that with those facts, as Officer Estrada is getting out of his vehicle, he absolutely had the reasonable suspicion to believe that there was a crime, a felony crime taking place. And then, and again, I urge you to go back to the video and watch. It takes less than 2 minutes from start to finish in terms of his apprehension. What you'll see is Officer Estrada is getting out of the vehicle, and as he is getting out of his vehicle, the three individuals inside the vehicle open the doors, begin to walk, and then Mr. Shelton and Mr. Delavecchio begin to run. And that is in response to Officer Estrada saying, come here. And he says that twice. And Mr. Delavecchio actually stops, as does the female passenger in the vehicle, but Mr. Shelton continues to run. And it's at that point that headlong flight and evasion of law enforcement that then raises Officer Estrada's suspicion from reasonable suspicion to probable cause to believe that a crime is taking place.
If we don't agree with you that there was reasonable suspicion at the point that Mr. Shelton started running, Would his flight be enough to create reasonable suspicion at this point?
Your Honor, I would contend that if you do not believe that there was reasonable suspicion leading up to the flight, at the point that he takes flight, there is then probable cause that a crime is being committed. And we're basing that off of particularly Illinois v. Wardlow. You know, that's a longstanding case that, while not necessarily indicative of wrongdoing, that flight is certainly suggestive of such. And based on the fact that Officer Estrada believed had all of this constellation of factors that were taking place, and then he calls out to these individuals and they begin to run away from him, fleeing from law enforcement, that at that point rose to the level of probable cause, which then, you know, funnels into our next issue, which is whether or not Officer Estrada was in hot pursuit of Shelton at the time that he decided to run into the backyard of the home. And so it's the contention of the United States that at that point there is probable cause to believe that a crime is taking place and that Officer Estrada was in immediate and continuous pursuit of Shelton at that point and was justified in going into the backyard of the house to try and apprehend Mr. Shelton at that point. And then from there, Your Honor, you'll see from the video, he briefly is able to grab him, and then Mr. Shelton again takes off. He leaves the backyard. He goes to another home, and he is found later underneath a trailer, at which point he's pulled out. And that's at the point where he's asked about the vehicle and whose it is and that kind of a thing. Moving on to the search warrant issue, Your Honor, it's our contention, obviously, that Officer Estrada had probable cause when he began to chase Shelton into the backyard. All of that information is then submitted in the search warrant, and that the car was properly impounded awaiting the search warrant. As this court knows, Officer Estrada actually, given the fact that he had probable cause at the time, had two choices. He could have exercised the automobile exception and actually searched the vehicle right then and there, but instead he actually decided to take the safer route. He submitted an affidavit for a search warrant. He received that search warrant and eventually searched the car. That being said, again, there is a second search warrant in this case related to the gun, because as they went into the vehicle, they saw the gun. They didn't want to take it, so they submitted a second search warrant to ensure that that would be an appropriate seizure. And so it's the United States' contention here that the community caretaking doctrine is not even applicable because of the fact that Officer Estrada had the probable cause to begin with. Your Honors, unless you all have any questions for me, we would simply ask that the court affirm the district court's denial of Mr. Shelton's motion to suppress.
Judge Baldock, you have any questions?
I have no questions at this time.
Counsel, before you drop off, I was on a panel in our March term of court, which seems so many years ago. and in that case, we had the same problem with the legal standard.
Yes.
Being applied
I actually
in these cases. Okay. Well, I hope that's being corrected in the District of New Mexico.
Yes, Your Honor, if I may, I realize this is somewhat anecdotal coming from lowly AUSA, but I do understand that there are at least four or five cases that have come up with that same standard and that the district court has been made well aware and is well aware that the standard is incorrect and has corrected itself.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Mr. Rubin, you had some rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, getting back to your we'll revisit your question a bit more, but ultimately, we believe strongly that the court erred in determining that there was reasonable suspicion. And then it makes it that much harder if there wasn't to get to probable cause. And even if the court did determine there was probable cause at that point based on flight, although, again, they were walking, it was Officer Estrada who was really responsible for the flight when he escalated the situation. And even with probable cause, if the court finds that there was, you still need exigent circumstances. We rely on our argument that there were no exigent circumstances. So again, without the original reasonable suspicion, I think it makes it that much harder to get to probable cause, and I don't think you get there.
Mr. Rubin, if there was reasonable suspicion, does that create exigent circumstances once the flight commences?
I think it makes it easier to get to exigent circumstances if there was objective, reasonable circumstances, Your Honor. Also, in terms of your original question of Mr. Shelton, you know, exercising his Fifth Amendment rights, but why didn't he tell the officer? Well, again, I would rely on him, you know, again, exercising his Fifth Amendment right. But I would also say that the officer did a pretty lousy job of investigating that evening. They, you know, you have the videos of him going back to the rear trailer where there was an occupant there. And that man was not even asked whether Mr. Shelton lived in the residence in front. The gentleman was asked who the owner was, but it could have been a simple question of, well, do three of these people that we just arrested live there? And that question wasn't asked. So I don't think our legal analysis changes whatsoever in holding to the officer to the standards of reasonable suspicion and probable cause simply based on Mr. Shelton exercising his Fifth Amendment rights. Thank you.
Yeah, I have one more question. As I understood the government saying that Mr. Shelton had twice disavowed ownership of the vehicle. How does that factor into a reasonable suspicion analysis?
Well, the original reasonable suspicion, clearly he hadn't talked to Mr. Shelton at that time. So we're looking at Mr. Shelton's answers or non-answers after, you know, 10 minutes after the officer would have needed to have reasonable suspicion.
Was it before he was arrested?
That he confirmed that the, or he said that this is not my... Sorry, I guess I'm not understanding.
Yeah. Did he deny ownership of the vehicle before he was formally arrested?
I'd have to look back at the video. My understanding is that when they found him, he was under the trailer. I think the officer probably would have immediately arrested him, and then Mr. Shelton would have made that statement. But I'd have to go back and look at the video, Your Honor.
Okay. Well, very good, counsel. I appreciate your time's expired. Both of you did a very fine job. I appreciate that under the circumstances. The case will be submitted. This is our second and last oral argument for the morning, so the call will be terminated after the courtroom deputy says so.